up, you beautiful bastards? Hope you're having a fantastic Monday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, and let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're going to talk about today, one of the most requested stories from just the past week, is an update around the TanaCon Tanamojo disaster. And essentially, I've been in a holding pattern to talk about this story because all the kind of official statements have been released over a three-part docuseries from Shane Dawson. And in fact, the last one was uploaded as I was finishing today's show, so I felt I needed to comment and look through it. And so if you're interested in the story, you want to see more, I'll link down below to the docuseries. It's incredibly well done, entertaining. It gives people the chance to kind of give their side of the story. But that said, to properly break down the situation and what everyone is saying versus what reality is, I need more time. But three, while I have your attention, for those that do care about this story and then they're kind of trying to place blame here or there or saying, oh, you know, it really wasn't this person's fault or not, the most eye-opening part of the docuseries is behind-the-scenes footage of when they were planning the event.
But what is capacity? The hotel told me to call the group. But obviously,
like, in like the main ballroom.
I have it set at 5,200
right now.
I love that for us.
So I feel like 5,200 is a good number.
It would be really, really cool to have people like outside waiting to get in.
Like, people love to be oppressed outside.
Yeah.
They're just like, I waited in the rain. Like, they love that shit. I love that shit.
And thanks to this footage, it appears that not only was it understood that there were going to be way too many people trying to get into this venue, but that appears to be what they were hoping for and what Tana was excited by. But that said, if you haven't watched the docuseries after today's show, highly recommend it. And two, yes, there's a lot more I want to say on this story. Then we have Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in the news. And this is because he responded to the allegations that he groped a reporter in 2000 at a music festival.
I remember that day in Creston well. It was an Avalanche Foundation event to support avalanche safety. I had a good day that day. I don't remember any negative interactions that day at all.
What I will say is I was surprised that there were not follow-up questions in that moment. The reason I say that is Trudeau says that he remembers the day very well. He does not recall any negative interactions, but I believe the follow-up question should have been, well, what do you say to people that have been posting an image from an editorial in 2000, specifically August 14th, 2000 in the Creston Valley Advance that wrote, quote, "I'm sorry if I had known you were reporting for a national paper. I never would have been so forward." Those were the words that were spoken to an Advance reporter by Justin Trudeau, son of former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, August 4th. And that local paper writing that apology came a day later. And that is so we can simply get an answer from the PM. Was that paper lying? Did you not actually give that quote? Or if you actually did give that quote, does that mean you are lying now? Or are you just giving an apology to make something go away even though you don't believe that anything happened? And obviously we're talking about an incident from 18 years ago. But it's also important to note that the whole situation around that editorial is pretty muddy. One, the editorial is unsigned. Two, when the woman that was allegedly touched was contacted by the CBC last, reportedly she did not want to be connected to the story anymore. And so then we look to a former coworker of the woman that spoke with the CBC, a woman by the name of Valerie Bourne, who said, "My recollections of the conversation were that she came to me because she was unsettled by it. She didn't like what had happened. She wasn't sure how she could proceed with it because, of course, we're talking somebody who is known to the Canadian community." But then also adding, "It was a brief touch. I would not classify it or qualify it as sexual assault." We also had the paper's editor at the time, Brian Bell, saying, "I don't recall that the reporter was coming across as having been traumatized or distraught about it, but definitely that whatever physical touch or whatever had occurred in that moment was definitely not welcome and definitely inappropriate." And so then that description of what had transpired, it brings up the question, okay, so did Trudeau, like, touch a shoulder or an arm? Sometimes people, when they talk with someone, that happens. When he found out that it had bothered someone, is that why he then later apologized? But as of right now, that is where we are, and we'll have to wait to see if more details do come forward. But from that, I want to share some stuff I love today, and today in awesome brought to you by NordVPN.com/Phil. Now, if you're not familiar with what a VPN is, I'm not going to shame you, but it is important to know. VPNs allow users to securely access a private network and share data remotely through public networks. And much like a firewall protects your data on your computer, VPNs protect it online. And it's not just an at-home thing. I mean, for me, I think of all the public networks I connect to, whether it be something like a Starbucks or a hotel, like I recently came back from VidCon. And what I'm doing always feels fantastic because NordVPN has thousands of super fast servers in 61 countries and has absolutely no data logging. You can secure your browsing in seconds, whether it be desktop, laptop, phone, Android, iOS. You get confused, they have fantastic 24/7 customer service. You end up not liking it, it's risk-free, 30-day money-back guarantee. And so if you want to make the smart move like many from the nation already have, you can start protecting your internet experience today with 77% off a 3-year plan at NordVPN.com/Phil. And the first bit of awesome actually lands kind of close to home. It's been announced that Jordan Peele and Charlie Sanders will be making a comedy sci-fi series called Weird City for YouTube Premium, and 6 episodes have already been ordered. They're expected to come out in 2019, and this is an awesome move to see. Then we got a trailer for the most recent partnership between Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg. It's called Mile 22. We've got Wiz Khalifa taking a lie detector test. Then we've got Ty Dolla $ign explaining his Instagram photos. You've got the Screen Junkies giving us serious questions about the Jurassic Park franchise. Then we've got a first look at the new Mission Impossible. We've also got a first look at The Purge. We also got the news that Iko Uwais, who, if you do not know, is the star of my favorite fighting film, The Raid and The Raid 2. If you like movies with fighting, action, highly recommend it, but also do not watch them with English dubs. The main point, the reason I'm talking about him, is he just got his own Netflix series where not only will he star in it, but he's also going to be producing it as well as being the stunt and martial arts coordinator. There's no premiere date set right now, but I am so excited. And if you want to see the full versions of everything, I just shared the secret link of the day, anything at all. Links, as always, are in the description down below. Then in business news, let's quickly talk Tesla. According to an internal email sent to employees, Elon Musk said that Tesla has now officially made more than 5,000 Model 3s in just 1 week. Specifically, 5,031 Model 3s in the last week of their second quarter, writing, "We did it. What an incredible job by an amazing team. Couldn't be more proud to work with you. It is an honor. Not only did we factory gate over 5,000 Model 3s, but we also achieved the S and X production target for a combined 7,000 vehicle week," adding, "We are on track to reach 6,000 a week for Model 3 next month. I think we just became a real car company." And publicly, Elon Musk tweeted out, "7,000 cars, 7 days. Heart emoji, Tesla team, heart emoji." And obviously, while there are a lot of people internally with Tesla that are excited about this, Tesla supporters are excited about this, there are also those that are kind of mocking Elon Musk. The idea that Tesla is a real car company, that they are celebrating 7,000 cars in 7 days. Because in a public response to Elon Musk, we saw Stephen Armstrong quote tweet Elon, then writing, "7,000 cars, circa 4 hours, heart emoji, Ford team, heart emoji." And my personal response to this is it feels a little bit weird that the head of Ford Europe would do this. Ford's an established company. They made their first Model T, I think it was back in 1908. And then you have a Tesla, which didn't have the road until what, 2011. Their first production vehicle was the Model S, and that came late 2012. So it's this very kind of weird, strange punch down, although it sounds weird to say someone's punching down on Elon Musk. But we'll see. Maybe in 5 years, Stephen Armstrong will tweet or have some kind of talk where he's like, remember Tesla? That was so crazy. Or in 5 years, we look back to Armstrong's tweet as something almost akin to Blockbuster talking shit about Netflix. We'll have to wait to see, but like I always say when it comes to stories like this, any and all competition, welcome, because hopefully we get better prices and better products. Then, in incredibly important international news, let's look to Mexico. If you don't know, Mexico just yesterday held its presidential election, and it's very important for a number of reasons. Mexico is the second largest economy in Latin America and is a hugely important economic partner for the United States. You know, along with Canada and the United States, they're one-third of NAFTA. In fact, Mexico is the second largest buyer of U.S. goods, America's third largest trading partner overall. And of course, in the news, we're seeing more and more immigration is a massive issue, and how that is connected to crime. And that's something President Trump has hit on time and time again, even back in 2015 when he was just a candidate.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems. And they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
And as far as what Donald Trump is talking about, there is another big international issue, but also a very Mexico issue, and that is the cartel problem. In recent years, Mexico has suffered from widespread corruption and horrific violence related to the drug trade. And in fact, the drug war between the government and the major Mexican drug cartels is estimated to have resulted in more than 250,000 deaths since 2006. In 2017 alone, there were more than 29,000 homicides in Mexico. And that's the most since the government started keeping records back in 1997, and the horrible news is 2018 is set to break the record again. And this horrific violence has unsurprisingly continued through Mexico's election season. Reportedly, more than 130 political candidates and party workers have been killed since campaigning began in September. And this violence, among other things, has led to deep dissatisfaction with the current Mexican president, Enrique Peña Nieto, and his ruling PRI party. And many Mexicans have seen him as unable to make any impact on improving security in the country. And so all of that seems to be the huge reason we are seeing such a big political shift in Mexico. And with an incredibly strong majority, Mexico voted for 64-year-old leftist candidate and former mayor of Mexico City, Andrés Manuel López Obrador. He was predicted to win, but he blew past those predictions. And as of recording this video, only 60% of the vote has been counted so far, but his rivals have called to concede. López Obrador, who is usually known by his initials AMLO, he's expected to maintain that large margin and will take office in December. And AMLO's victory is a huge change for Mexican politics. Over the last 3 decades, the moderate PRI party and the right of center PAN party have dominated national politics in the country. But AMLO represents the National Regeneration Movement, or Morena. It's a leftist coalition party that's only been in existence as an official political party since 2014. And so it appears that the voters in Mexico are showing no faith for the establishment, have been looking for a leader that can quell the violence in the country and reduce economic inequality. And I think it's important we talk about AMLO's stances because it's not just going to affect Mexico. It is very likely and understandably going to affect the United States of America for all the reasons that I started with. And so we'll start with the drug war because AMLO's position here is actually one of the most controversial he holds. AMLO wants to negotiate with the drug cartels and even potentially offer them amnesty, saying last December, "If it is necessary, we will talk about granting amnesty so long as the victims and their families are willing." Additionally, in a recent debate, he said he would not rule out any option to achieve peace. He's also called for a reduction in the militarization of government forces fighting drug cartels. He's used the campaign slogan, Abrazos, no balazos, or in English, it would be hugs, not gunfire. He's also opened the door to legalizing certain drugs. And with this stance, you've seen a lot of pushback from political opponents as well as victims of the drug war. PRI presidential candidate Jose Antonio Meade saying you want to forgive the unforgivable. But you also have people supporting AMLO saying it is hypocritical for his political opponents to criticize his stance given how many politicians are working hand in hand with the drug cartels. And actually, on that note, in AMLO's victory speech, he specifically focused on rooting out corruption at all levels of the government.
La transformación que llevaremos a cabo consistirá básicamente en desterrar la corrupción de nuestro país.
Then there's AMLO's stance on economic inequality, and that's a massive issue in Mexico, which is unsurprising because according to a 2015 Oxfam report, just 1% of the country owns 43% of the country's wealth. And so here, AMLO has pledged to launch or expand a series of social programs to combat this inequality. This includes doubling pensions for the elderly, expanding educational opportunities for students, offering free access to telecommunication services such as the internet, increasing subsidies for farmers. And according to his advisors, these reforms are expected to cost around 10% of the federal budget, or $25 billion a year. And then that brings us to U.S.-Mexico relations. In response to AMLO's win, we saw President Trump tweet, "Congratulations to AMLO on becoming the next president of Mexico. I look very much forward to working with him. There is much to be done that will benefit both the United States and Mexico. But as far as if that goodwill will last, we'll see, and I'm not the most hopeful." And the reason I say that is, at least publicly, immigration is one of the biggest issues between the two countries right now. Back in February, in response to Trump talking about the border wall, AMLO said, "If he insists on building the wall, we're going to turn to the United Nations to defend the rights of Mexicans. I'm conscious of my historic responsibility." Additionally, AMLO will be inheriting the tariff situation right now, also how that connects to NAFTA. Also, we have specific instances, like back in January, Trump incorrectly tweeted that Mexico is the most dangerous country in the world, writing, "We need the wall for the safety and security of our country. We need the wall to help stop the massive inflow of drugs from Mexico, now rated the number one most dangerous country in the world." To which AMLO responded that same day to reporters, "Without being disrespectful, we're going to put Trump in his place." Which, hey, I'm gonna make a wild prediction, would be something that Donald Trump would not appreciate. But that said, of course, really only time will tell, one, how this pans out for Mexico, and two, how this pans out for U.S.-Mexico relations. And obviously with a story like this, there's a lot you could chime in on, and feel free to talk about anything, but the specific question I have for this story is, what is your feeling about amnesty for people involved with the drug cartels? I mean, we mentioned it at the top of the story. We've had several stories throughout the years where we talk about the incredible violence in the country. What are your thoughts about this potential move to legalize drugs, to forgive the cartels and people involved in these crimes in hopes that it leads to a better tomorrow? Is it your thought that is insane, that it shows that there is no justice here? Or are you of the mindset that overwhelming situations that seem to not be getting better, you require drastic moves? Right, a mindset that the ends justify the means. I'd love to know your thoughts on this story, especially if you are a viewer from Mexico. And that's actually where I'm going to end today's show. And of course, remember, this is the Philip DeFranco Show. It's not just a show, it is a conversation. So whether it be the last story, the first one, anything in between, let me know what you're thinking in those comments down below. Also, remember, if you like this video, like what I'm trying to do with this show, hit that like button. If you're new here, hit that subscribe button, ring that bell for notifications. Also, if you missed the last show, Friday's shows are back, so if you want to watch that, you can click or tap right there to watch that. Or if you want to watch the newest behind-the-scenes vlog, you can click or tap right there to watch that. But that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.